This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on October 1st, 2015. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Much for all being here. The open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for Thursday, October 1st will come to order. We have some late submitted documents this morning. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we waive the rules on the late submission of agenda documents in order to consider the following. Agenda document number 15-151-A, 15-51-B, 15-50-A, 15-50-B, and 15-52-A.
Thank you. Are there any questions, comments about the motion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Thank you, Madam Secretary. That passes unanimously. I understand that the requester, Mr. Eric Zolt, in the repledge advisory opinion matter, is on the phone and has to leave early to teach a class. So if there's no objection, without objection, I will take his request up first for discussion. Is that acceptable to everybody? All right. So we will move to the repledge matter. And the first item then is Draft Advisory Opinion 2015-8 Repledge. Today we have Theo Lutz and Amy Rothstein in the back there from OGC here to discuss the matter. And as I indicated, we have the requester, Eric Zolt, on the phone. Mr. Zolt, are you there?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
And thank you, Madam, for the opportunity to participate.
Well, thank you for being here. Welcome. Staff, Mr. Lutz, are you ready to make a presentation? Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda documents 1551A and 51B include two draft responses to an advisory opinion request by Repledge.
Can you speak maybe a little more into the?
Sure.
I'm not
Repledge
sure everybody can hear.
Repledge is a for-profit corporation. Is that better?
I don't think it may not be on. It is. Can people in the back hear? Okay.
It proposes to establish a web-based platform through which an individual can pledge funds to a federal candidate and designate a charity to receive the funds if the pledge is matched by pledges made by supporters of the opposing candidate. Both drafts conclude that Repledge's proposal is permissible under the Act, though their reasoning differs. The Commission received one comment on the request. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any comments, questions with regard to this matter? Commissioner
Lutz,
Goodman.
Can you just summarize for us any differences? Repledge came to the Commission and sought an advisory opinion request several years ago. Have there been any significant changes in the requests between the last time Repledge was before us and this one? Since I'm new, I wasn't here for the prior one.
I would defer to the requester for factual changes, but factually the proposal is quite similar. There are a few questions that they didn't ask this time, but since Repledge came to us in 2012, the Commission has issued a few advisory opinions on these types of issues.
And those opinions include, for example, CrowdPak and Skimmer Hat?
Yes.
Madam Chair,
yes,
can
sir.
I speak?
Please respond. Thank you.
The only real substantive difference is we clarified the organizational structure of Repledge. When it's going to be organized now, it'll be as something called a California B organization, a for-profit organization. In the prior request, Commissioner Goodman, we left open the possibility of being a not-for-profit organization to do this. And the decision really rests primarily on where we think we can get the better funding opportunities to move the platform forward.
Okay. Are there any other Questions, comments? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions for Professor Zolt. Hi, Professor. This is Ellen Weintraub.
Okay. Good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you. Let me state at the outset that I hear where you're coming from, and I share a lot of your concerns. I think a lot of people in this country, certainly judging by every poll that I've seen, are really fed up and disgusted with our campaign finance system, and I think it is laudable, and I appreciate the creativity and effort that went into trying to come up with innovative ways to try and address some of the concerns that people are expressing out there about the way we fund our campaigns. So I appreciate that, and I hear you. But I do have some questions and concerns about this particular proposal. Part of it is just practically speaking, I'm not entirely clear on how this is going to work. So people will pledge a certain amount of money and indicate which candidate they would want that money to go to or which charity they would want it to go to. Could they choose more than one charity or just one charity?
You would just choose one charity.
One charity. Okay. Well, that makes it a little simpler. And based on how many people pick candidate A and how many people pick candidate B, some or all of each individual's pledge will go to the candidate or the charity of their choice. But how will people know? How will they be able to verify that it's working the way it's designed to work, and that to the extent that their money is not going to the candidate of their choice, that an equal amount of money is not going to the other guy or woman?
Yeah, Commissioner, I understand your concern. The key factor is that we plan to have what we call fund drives, and those would be 7 to 10 days, and the transparency would be clearer on the web platform. That what you would have is a little thermometer on each side, seeing how it goes up. And to get into the fund drive, you would have to register as a member and give credit card information, just in the same way when you go to a hotel and they put a hold on your card for a certain amount. The same thing would happen in the repledge situation. And then at the end of the fund drive, whether it's a week or 10 days, the results would be posted, and you could see exactly how much was raised by each of the candidates. And then you'll get a information for both the amount that's a charitable contribution and the amount that went to the candidate.
But the information that'll be disclosed, it'll be disclosed in bulk, right? I mean, you're not going to list the individual, you know, Joe Jones is $300 is going here and $200 is going there. And
right. That's correct. That what you would see is the total amount raised. You wouldn't see who the other participants are in the fund drive.
So people just have to trust that you've got your system set up right and there aren't any glitches in it in order to feel comfortable with this, I guess.
Yes.
And please don't take my questions the wrong way. I know that you have had a long and distinguished career in the private sector, the public sector, and academia, and I do not in any way wish to suggest that I have concerns about the way you're going to run this. However, we don't give advisory. Our advisory opinions are about requests, not requestors. And if we approve a certain approach, then other people can follow the same approach. And I am a little bit concerned that this type of approach, because basically the money's going to go into a black box, and then people will be told, oh, your contribution was matched by somebody else's contribution, so we took all the money that you would have given to candidate A and gave it to the charity of your choice. I mean, basically, people are going to be operating on trust at that point. There'll be no way for them to actually verify that. And I think that in somebody else's hands, that, you know, that could turn out to be problematic. So I do have that concern. And The other concern that I have is, what's to stop somebody from being a little mischievous with your proposals, particularly somebody who's got enough money to burn that, you know, they don't mind making some extra contributions to charity. So they say, okay, I'm going to pledge the max to my candidate, and knowing that in doing so, I'm going to divert that same amount of money from the other candidate. And then after, you know, okay, so the money will go to charity, but then after the fund drive closes, I'll just go ahead and make my contribution to my preferred candidate anyway, so that somebody who thought that money was being diverted from the system is really just diverting their own money from the system, and the other guy is out there making the contribution anyway. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do, and we do not have a way to prevent people who have made contributions subject to the condition that it goes to the charity, then to make contributions outside. And the only limitation is the standard FEC limitation on the amounts individuals can contribute to a campaign.
Sure. Can if you have repeated fund drives, can somebody participate more than once? Can they?
As long as they didn't use up their limit.
Right. So, you know, and maybe I'm just too cynical. but I could envision somebody just being very mischievous about this and saying, okay, you know, good. Now I have somebody to whom the money didn't matter that much, and there seem to be people in the system who have a lot of money to spend. Okay, I'm going to go into this fund drive and see if I can divert $2,700 from the opposition candidate, and then I'll go into the next fund drive and see if I can divert some more money. And at the end of the day, I'm going to make my own contribution anyway, and you know, potentially give to the super PACs as well. My concern here is that it is potentially subject to manipulation, that it is kind of a black box exactly how the calculations are being made and whether it's actually following the program that it's supposed to follow. And as I said, it's not you, Professor. I'm kind of worried about the precedent that mm-hmm. could be set.
Commissioner Weintraub, can I add one more thing?
Sure.
Well, we did discuss having a accounting firm audit the results so that we would, in effect, get confirmation of our approach from an independent auditor. I don't think that would solve all your concerns, but I think it would solve at least some of them.
That is exactly right. That would solve some but not all of my concerns in this instance, but since it isn't incorporated in any event into the facts of this request, it wouldn't affect the precedent that we would be setting. So you might say, you know, just to show what stand-up guys we are, we're going to make sure that we have this audit and so everybody can be comfortable. But what does that mean for the next person who comes down the road? I guess the drafts, both, I think, acknowledge that your request is in some senses similar to some requests that have come in and been granted in the interim since your last request. But in some senses, it's different. And I decided there was a draft that said these differences are material, and therefore the answer, sadly, is no. I decided not to go public with that because it was pretty clear to me it wasn't going to get 4 votes, so why bother? But I think it really does come down to that, whether one thinks the differences between your proposal and the prior proposals are material or not. And I think given the concerns that I have about potential for abuse, and also given the way it operates, where people basically give up control over exactly how their money is going to be spent. You know, they have some parameters. They know it's going to go to one of two places, but exactly how much goes here and how much goes where, there, and whether any money at all goes to the candidate or the charity is really out of the contributor's hands at the point they make the pledge. And for me, that is a material difference. So I don't think I'm going to be able to. Here we go again, Professor. I couldn't support you last time. I guess I'm still not going to be able to support the request. But as I said, I do really appreciate the creativity and thought that went into the proposal. I'll just kind of throw out one policy thought for you. This doesn't affect my legal analysis, but as I said, I hear the concern about how much money is being spent on campaigns and how the money is being spent on, as you say, incessant TV spots, negative campaign ads, and unwanted political mailers. But I would just suggest to you that to maybe think about unintended consequences. Your proposal is going to, if it works the way it appears to be intended, is going to divert money, small dollar, hard dollar contributions from candidates who are the most transparent and accountable players in the political system, and could have the unintended consequence of making those candidates more reliant on outside spending groups who are less transparent, less accountable, sometimes rely on dark money, often are dependent on very large donors. And I don't know if you could convince the billionaire funders of super PACs to divert their millions to charity in lieu of the super PACs they're supporting or the other outside spending groups. But I would urge you to continue to think creatively about other aspects of the problem that I think are concerning to the folks who are concerned about how our money and politics system is functioning.
Commissioner, can I respond to that just briefly? That we were trying to estimate what percentage of contributors would use Repledge, and even on our optimistic assumptions, it's still less than 1% of all small contributors. So I'm less concerned about completely dominating the market and soaking up all that money for charitable purposes.
Well, you never know. You might be more successful than you think, but I appreciate the comment. And
in answer to your second point, we actually have discussed having a Repledge limited to super PACs.
That would be fun. And the only other comment I have for you, Professor, is that the Commission's holding a conference in San Diego at the end of the month, and then some of us are going to be at a conference at UCLA at the end of October. So I hope you'll stop by, and I would look forward to meeting you in person and talking more about it.
That'd be terrific.
Thank you, Professor.
Are there other comments? Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm prepared to support the proposal. I supported it last time, and I'm prepared to support it again. We have two different drafts. The draft that I support is draft A. Just when we've considered similar proposals in the contribution processing platform world, which we've had an uptick in recent years, the two main considerations that we've dealt with are, one, is the requester providing a service to the contributor or to a political committee? If it's to a contributor, that then we generally approve, provided that also the contribution processing component of the proposal is similar to other services that that are used commonly to move money around in the contemporary economy. So if those two conditions are met, then we typically have approved the proposal that's been put before the Commission. I think that draft A most faithfully applies the precedents that we've set forth in prior advisory opinions when we've considered contribution processing platforms. I view this, again, through a very straightforward rubric. What the policy implications of this proposal might be, both good or bad, I'm you know, agnostic regarding, at least with respect to how I'm going to vote on this. And I think also if we start going through worst case scenarios with every proposal that we have, especially on the technology side, we're going to likely stifle technological innovation. I think we can't be blind to potential downfall, you know, potential unintended consequences, but we also can't be paralyzed by them either. And I think that this proposal fits squarely within other precedents that we have approved. And so for that reason, I'll be prepared to support this proposal as well.
Are there other comments about this? Commissioner Walter. Commissioner Walther, did you want to speak? No, go ahead. He's deferring to you.
Professor Allen, really along the lines of Commissioner Weintraub, my name's Steve Walther, but I would not be supporting this, and I do applaud your effort here, but for those reasons, and I'm concerned about the role of corporations having any role really in allocating and providing money through the system. I think we have enough corporate activity at this point already, and any possible way where the corporation's in touch of and has the money and has a system whereby it can go one way or the other, I'm just concerned about the implications of that, or regardless of the good faith in this case, whether there could be some abuse along the line.
Commissioner Goodman.
Yeah, I guess I want to associate myself with the comments of the vice chair, and just that this is another one of these technological platforms where people choose to enter it. They have voluntary choice, and as the professor says, very small percentage of people may so choose. I would imagine that the people who would choose to enter this forum, this platform, are going to be largely motivated by their interest in charitable giving. But I defer to the choice of people to purchase that service offered on that platform when they pledge their money. And the notion that we should somehow anticipate or presume abuse in a request, I think, varies from what our duties are under the advisory opinion process. We accept the representations made. We assume that the person will abide by the representations made. I think everyone here has said they trust Professor Zolt to ministerially account for and handle the members' money according to the rules of the platform. And so anticipating that I don't like this platform because somebody else may have a similar platform, seek protection of this advisory opinion, and then defraud people or cheat by not accurately accounting for their money, I think denies Professor Zolt the advisory opinion that he is due at repledge based on a good faith representation that he is going to account for the money accurately and that the members are going to get the service that they chose to purchase. And so I think we need to defer to people who choose to participate in these types of platforms. They get to do so nationally across geographical boundaries because of the power of the internet, and I just think it's folly for us to begin second-guessing what other people might do and how they may not handle other people's money appropriately when this requester is going to do it appropriately. So I intend to support draft A for that reason.
Are there other comments by commissioners? Well, then let me weigh in. I know you're all waiting with bated breath to hear my views on this. I also agree with the comments made by the vice chair with respect to this. I think that what you are proposing, Professor, is a creative approach and response to what we see about money in politics, arms race, and it's being, suggested in a very salutary way. And while I do understand, that there could be some ramifications of everything, we all know that every campaign finance issue has some ramifications that someone might exploit at some point. But here, Repledge is essentially acting like a bill processor with, the bonus of redirecting the money potentially to charities, which are all salutary purposes, and so I favor them. However, for the concerns, because of the concerns raised by Commissioner Walther, I
I cannot agree with draft A. I support draft B. And the reason that I do not support draft A is I feel that it is an expansion. And while it's true, we look at just what's before us in terms of AOs. We all know that other groups do look to these AOs to determine whether or not they're going to be in compliance. And the language in draft A that seems to expand the corporate exemption, I think, is problematic. And for that reason, I'm going to be supporting only draft B. And if there's a possibility, I know we came out with these drafts just yesterday, if there's some possibility that we can reach some kind of an agreement either in the next few weeks or maybe not today, but at some other point, I'm very happy to work with your offices to try to find some mutual agreement on this matter.
Do I have a question for when is the deadline for giving Professor Zolt his answer?
October 19th.
October what?
19th.
19th. We don't have another public meeting scheduled until when?
The 29th, I believe.
Okay. I don't know that it takes a public meeting, but I think we ought to consider that now and maybe alert Professor Zolt. Perhaps he would be willing to grant an extension?
Yes. Professor Zolt, let's just ask you that, you know, right now.
I'm perfectly willing to grant an extension.
Okay. Thank you. And so that would be until when, General?
We can work with the
professor. You can work it out with the professor.
After the next open meeting.
All right.
It may not be necessary to go to the next public meeting, but I think we ought to at least allow ourselves that much time.
Correct. Okay. Yes, Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that if there's a possibility of putting together a yes draft, I think we need to work towards that end to see if there is a way that we can thread the needle in a way that's comfortable for all of us. So I'll look forward to continuing to work with you all on this as well, so that if we both agree at the end of the day that this is a permissible proposal, then I think we need to do all we can to make sure that Mr. Zolt has the protection of advisory opinion. So I look forward towards working toward that end.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I agree. I agree with that. So thank you, Professor Zolt, for participating today, and the Office of Policy of the Office of General Counsel will be in touch with you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda is item number one, draft advisory opinion 2015-7, Hillary for America. I understand that requester's counsel is not going to appear today, but we have Joanna Waldstreicher with us from the Office of General Counsel, and Bob Knopp, I know you're hiding back there, Bob Knopp, to discuss the matter. So, Ms. Waldstreicher, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Ravel. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda document 1552A is a draft response to an advisory opinion request submitted by Hillary for America. Hillary for America is the authorized campaign committee of presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. The request asks whether attendees at some of the committee's campaign events may pay for their own food, beverages, and valet parking without those payments being considered in-kind contributions to the committee. The draft concludes that because the attendees would not be making the payments on behalf of the committee, the payments for food, beverages, and valet parking would not constitute in-kind contributions to the committee. We did not receive any comments on the request or on the draft, and if the draft is approved, we would ask for authority to make any necessary technical and conforming changes.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments for counsel? Hearing none, is there a motion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Not a motion. Sorry.
I understand.
I wanted to see if anybody else wanted to talk. I had been hoping, actually, that our friend Mr. Elias would be here because I did want to engage with him a little bit on the facts here. I'm not exactly I'm not 100% clear on what kinds of venues he has in mind where there's food available, but it's not part of the event. I mean, one can imagine a wide range of different scenarios. There's the hot dog scenario in the request. I think I can do that even better. One can imagine somebody on their way to a campaign speech or whatever, where they're not expecting any food and they stop off at the coffee shop and get a to-go cup, like my colleague has sitting next to him, and walk into a campaign event holding their own to-go cup of coffee. And I can't imagine anybody would ever imagine that was an in-kind contribution to the campaign, that somebody brings their own cup of coffee into what is otherwise a campaign event. And I doubt if anybody would ask that question. On the other end of the spectrum, there's somebody else picking up the catering costs for a campaign event, and I would hope that everybody would agree that is a contribution, which might be okay depending on who the host is and what where the event is. You know, there's the in-home exception for a certain amount of food and beverages, although this seems to contemplate not in people's homes, but rather in restaurants and other commercial venues. So there's, you know, what appears to me to be plainly not acceptable, or at least subject to limits, and what also appears to be unquestionably okay, and then the vast amount of space in between. What's significant to me about this is that this request posits that people will be buying their own. They're going to buy their own food, they're going to buy their own beverages, they're going to pay for their own parking. You know, again, since other folks can rely on these opinions to the extent that they are in a materially indistinguishable situation, that's the precedent that we would be setting here, that people can buy their own. I think it would be a very different scenario if one person was proposing to buy the food for all of the attendees, whether that person was themselves an attendee or not. One could envision, for example, a campaign event set up in a hotel in one room, and in the room next door there's a hospitality suite set up by a sympathetic super PAC. And the sympathetic super PAC has got all sorts of paraphernalia and food and drinks and all sorts of other things, and they say, have a big sign out front saying, oh, you know, we stop by here and pick up some food and then, you know, take it with you. You don't have to stay here. You can take it across the hall with you or next door. That would be a very different scenario, and perhaps, you know, different commissioners would have different perspectives on this, but I want to be very clear that that's not what we're being asked, and since I plan to vote for this AO, that is not what I am here approving. We've got very specific facts that are before us about people, you know, paying their own way, basically buying their own food and beverages and paying for their own parking, and I don't see that as a problem under these circumstances. So I'm going to support the draft.
Are there other comments, questions? No. If not, is there a motion?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. In our consideration of advisory opinion request 2015-07, Hillary for America, I move approval of agenda document number 15-52-A.
Any questions? All those in favor, please. Oh, sorry, Madam Secretary.
And authorizing OGC to make any technical and conforming edits.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Okay, Madam Secretary, that motion passes unanimously. The next item on the agenda is item 3. Agenda document 15-49A, and it is my memorandum to the Commission on prohibiting foreign national contributions in ballot initiatives, and a request that there be some action by the Office of General Counsel with respect to this issue. some people, and we've had this discussion in the past at the commission level, don't believe that foreign money in state and local elections that are ballot initiative campaigns is a serious problem. But I do, because I think it threatens the overall integrity of elections throughout this country. I mean, think of it. Do we want Vladimir Putin or drug cartels to be influencing American elections? The commission shouldn't. That's why I have asked to move, but I think now Commissioner Weintraub may actually make the motion to direct the Office of General Counsel to draft a notice of proposed rulemaking to define the term election for the purposes of the ban on foreign national contributions and expenditures to include state and local ballot measures. Congress has acted to include ballot measures in its expanded and strengthened ban on foreign political contributions in BICRA in 2002. The foreign contribution ban had previously only applied to candidate elections, elections to any political office or to select candidates for political office, and it was changed to prohibit foreign money in a federal, state, or local election. In a recent enforcement case, MindGeek for USA Incorporated, the commission failed to proceed with an investigation in a case where the facts showed that a foreign national contributed funds to a Los Angeles ballot measure. This commission has the responsibility to enforce the law, and Congress has directed the commission to keep foreign money out of local, state, and federal elections. And that's why I'm asking today my fellow commissioners to open a rulemaking to revise our erroneous regulations to protect ballot measures. Congress's decision to expand the ban to reach all elections requires the commission to act to protect ballot measures from foreign influence. The commission should conform its regulations to the statute and enforce the foreign money ban. In my home state of California, where MindGeek arose, measures are often placed on the ballot to influence turnout for candidate elections, both the number of voters and their ideology. Huge sums of money are spent running advertisements and sending mail to increase turnout of some voters and depress turnout of others. And some of those ads directly relate to candidates running on the same ballot, shaping the views of the electorate on one or more candidates. So the impact of state and local ballot measure spending on candidates can be intentional and direct. Moreover, as I've said many times before and in my statement on MindGeek, ballot measures are a means for citizens to directly participate in democracy, speaking on issues that impact them, such as land use, school funding policy, policing, water, property taxes, or amending the state constitution. Foreign governments, foreign businesses, and foreign oligarchs should have no say in our land use policy. The Federal Election Commission was established to protect the integrity of elections. Part of doing so is ensuring that our elections are free from foreign influence. So without objection, I'm asking, there's someone in the audience here today who introduced himself this morning. His name is Tom Myers. He's the general counsel for AIDS Healthcare Foundation, which was one of the groups that was involved in the ballot initiative to pass the Safer Sex in the Adult Film Industry Act. He talked about the harm caused by foreign money infiltrating American elections. He came all the way from California. and would like to speak to us today. And so I'm asking without objection, such as what we've done previously in, you know, the hearing with Dan Backer when it was not part of our rules, but we allowed him to speak. I'm asking if he could speak to the commission on this issue. Is there any objection? No? So, Mr. Myers, please come forward. Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Good morning, and thank you very much for having me. Very much appreciate it.
Wait a second. I think you need to, right, turn it on.
Oh, okay. Is that better?
Okay. Yeah, great. Do you want to move chairs?
Sure. Oh, thank you very much. All right. Thank you and good morning. And again, I appreciate the ability to speak with you. My name is Tom Myers. I'm General Counsel and Chief of Public Affairs for the AIDS Healthcare Foundation. AHF is the largest HIV/AIDS nonprofit in the country. I'm also the counsel for the initial ballot measure proponents, which we call Measure B, out in Los Angeles. And our experience with Measure B is unique. I think it shows the need for what the chairman is proposing. Measure B was a measure to protect the public health, to help prevent the transmission of sexually transmitted diseases. And as we've seen from our experience with AIDS, with Ebola, with other types of infectious diseases don't respect state lines, they don't respect boundaries. So the decisions that are made in LA County with respect to public health and disease infection have implications outside of LA County, outside of California, and across the country. And so the issue, while uniquely local to LA County, does have a national component to it when you're talking about protecting the public health. And as stated before, foreign corporations simply have no interest in the public health of the United States, only in their own profits. For those reasons, this is a common sense measure, and I urge the commission to adopt it. It's really that simple, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Myers. All right, are there other comments?
I just have a question.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Commissioner,
did you file a complaint about this matter with the California Fair Practices Commission?
Yes, it has been filed, and so you know we're examining all avenues. I would say though, not every state has such a mechanism, and so in those states that don't have that, this is equally as important.
But in California, the foreign spending in referenda elections is illegal.
I believe that it is, yes. And we have filed a complaint to pursue.
Was there a prior complaint in this case filed before the California Fair Practices Commission?
I'm sorry?
Was there a prior complaint about Manwin International's
If you mean prior to the filing of this?
Yes, sir.
I don't know the chronology. I know that we have pursued both areas. I don't know that.
You're not aware, though, that there was a prior complaint about Manwin and its involvement in the referendum election?
I know that there is currently a complaint.
Yeah, you have
filed.
One now, I
yes.
understand.
Yes, I apologize, I simply do not know.
Okay.
About a prior one.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks. Any other questions? Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. the Chair began her statement by questioning the motives of I and a couple of my colleagues saying that we don't think it's a problem that foreign nationals may be involved in ballot measure initiatives, and I think that's ludicrous. Our consideration here is not whether or not we think it's a good or a bad thing. We don't have some sort of a moral warrant to promote the good and stamp out the bad. We are the Federal Election Commission that has a limited jurisdiction. The question that we had to consider in the MindGeek case was one that the commission has considered on many times before. That's whether our ballot initiatives elections under the Federal Election Campaign Act. And when you go through the definition of what an election is, it's very specific that it's about candidate elections. It's when we write our rules, we can write rules to flesh out a statutory scheme if there are gaps that are kind of logical outgrowths of the statutory scheme. The definition of election doesn't have a gap within it that we can really fill in and just say that this is that we can import in this notion that ballot initiatives are part of elections. Do I think that it would be a problem if we did? No, I don't. I think Congress has that authority. Frankly, I think that if Congress wanted to do that, I would not object to that. If there were a proposal to even include a legislative recommendation to Congress, I might support it. I'd have to see what the language looked like. I'd want to examine that. But I just wanted to spell at the outset that the notion that it's because I think I or any, you know, the colleagues of mine who voted the way we did in MindGeek, that that's a reflection of our insouciance towards foreign money in ballot initiatives at the state level is completely a false one. So I want to just state that out front. As to the modified language on the foreign national ban, I've looked through it. I just don't see how that expanded to ballot initiatives. It was never discussed in Congress. The language in the foreign national ban, if you can point to me where a ballot initiative is now tucked into the definition of an election with respect to the foreign national ban, I'd be open to that. I know that my colleague Commissioner Weintraub has done a compare and contrast between the language before and after and how it could be read into that. I just don't see it. And frankly, we had a case a couple of years ago, the Blooming case in the D.C. Circuit, which is one of the only cases that that touches upon the foreign national ban. And this is obviously a post-Bicker case and talks about, I'll just quote, it's just notably 441 EA, which is the old code provision. It's now, the foreign national ban is now in section 3121. It says, notably, section 441 EA, as we interpret it, does not restrain foreign nationals from speaking out about issues or spending money to advocate their views about issues. It restrains them only from a certain form of expressive activity closely tied to the voting process, providing money for a candidate or political party, or spending money in order to expressly advocate for or against the election of a candidate. So when we approach these issues, I have to approach it as, what authority do I have? How do I have the ability to write rules? Do I have the ability to rewrite a statute on the basis of what I think is good policy? And in the case of defining an election, I don't see the gap in the statute that allows me to rewrite what Congress has put into it. Like I said, if Congress wanted to do it, I appreciate that that you felt strongly enough about this that you wanted to come and express what the experience was in California and the concerns that it raised. And I do not I know how sincerely felt that they are. And I like I said, I am not at all opposed to the concerns that you have and the, you know, the red flag that you've raised about foreign influence in state and local ballot initiatives. This comes down to, what can I as a commissioner do? And at this point, I think that this is in Congress's court. And if there were some effort to put together a legislative recommendation, I'd be more than happy to take a look at that. Because like I said, I think Congress does have the authority to expand the definition of election if they saw fit. But until they do that, I just, as a commissioner, I don't believe that I have the authority and that I'd be acting outside the scope of my authority to try to redefine the definition of an election where I just don't see that we have a gap that we're able to fill.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't want to impugn anybody's motives.
Just to be clear, I wasn't saying that you did, but it was stated at the front that some of my colleagues don't seem to have.
I didn't say colleagues.
But
I didn't say colleagues.
You said some of us here don't think this is a problem.
I didn't say here. I have it written down. That's not how
I
said it.
Okay, then say it again. Go ahead.
Then if I misinterpreted it.
He did not misinterpret it.
Then who were you referring to?
Look, let's not get into petty. Go ahead.
Okay. Sorry, I shouldn't have started with that sentence. Although I don't mean to impugn anybody's motives, I understand the legal analysis that my colleagues went through in the MindGeek case. Obviously, I disagreed with it. I came to a different conclusion. The only thing I would slightly modify in what the chair said originally when she said our regulations are erroneous, I believe that our regulations can be read to include the conduct that was at issue in MindGeek, and that's the way that's why I voted the way I did. I think that Congress changed the law. They used to say, the law used to say that, I want to find the exact language so I'm precise about this, that it's, okay. Before the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, the act prohibited foreign national contributions or donations, quote, in connection with an election to any political office, plainly limited to elections for political office, for candidate elections. But they changed the words. They changed the words of the law. And they changed it to read, in connection with a federal, state, or local election. We have, you know, a letter from a member of Congress that we received just yesterday, late in the day, Congressman Brady, saying that he reads that change that way to be more encompassing than the language that it was before. Why take out the phrase for political office if you meant to continue to limit it to races for political office? And, you know, the reality is people go into the ballot booth or they, you know, mail in their ballots, however they vote, and they vote for candidate X and candidate Y, and then there are the ballot measures underneath, and I don't think anybody in that situation thinks, oh, I'm no longer participating in election because now I've gotten to the end of the list of candidates. Now that I'm looking at ballot measures, I'm doing something else, but it's not an election. I just don't think that's the experience of most voters as they are voting. They view that they are continuing to participate in the election. But in any event, Congress has created this ambiguity. What did they mean when they changed the words in the law? And that creates an opportunity for us if we choose to take it. And what we are trying to afford our colleagues is the opportunity to undertake that inquiry, to seek public comment. You know, I would hope we would get more comments from members of Congress, and, you know, maybe some would say, yes, we meant that, and other people would say, no, we didn't. We'd get comments from lawyers, I'm sure, on both sides of the question, but we're not pulling this out of thin air. They changed the words of the law. And while there is a line of precedence about ballot measures, this MindGeek case was the first time that the commission ever had cause to consider post-BCRA whether the foreign national ban applied to ballot measures. So it was, in some sense, a case of first impression for us. The Blumen case, I think the language in the Blumen case can be read both ways, and I pointed that out in my statement also in the MindGeek case. You don't have to make an agreement today that as to what the result of the rulemaking would be, but as is true in a number of instances where there are important issues that affect our democracy in front of us, I don't think we should be afraid to engage in the process and to ask the general counsel to draft a notice. People will comment one way or another. We could have hearings. We'll have an opportunity to do fact-finding and to draw a conclusion at the end of the day, you know, if you're not going to just shut it down right now and say, nope, we're not willing to listen to anybody on this. Made up our minds. Don't need to listen to anybody. Don't need to do this. You know, why Congress changed the words of the law, and I think that it's a legitimate inquiry to try and engage with the public on what that, and with Congress too, on what that might mean.
Commissioner Hunter.
These same tired phrases, they're just so old and so trite and so unsupported by anything that I keep hearing from the other side of the dais here, including what the chair started with. We've discussed this at the commission level, she said. Some people don't believe this is a serious problem. It's pretty easy to infer that she's talking about her fellow commissioners. And as I associate myself with everything the vice chair, with most of what the vice chair said, there's one little. And we have never said this isn't a serious problem. As he points out, we don't think this is part of our jurisdiction for a variety of reasons that we've spelled out in our previous statement. I don't think you can read the Blumen decision and say that there's any ambiguity there. The vice chair also read that. I'll read it again. The court said it permits, the act permits foreign nationals to make contributions and expenditures related to ballot initiatives. With respect to the letter from Mr. Brady, member of Congress, there's also been a bill introduced in April by Congressman Deutsch, I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right, of Florida. He introduced it April 28th of 2015. I believe he's on the Committee on House Administration. And he specifically wants to amend in FECA by striking the word election and inserting the following: election, including a state or local ballot initiative or referendum. So the congressman clearly believes that a change needs to be made in Congress in order to accomplish what you seek to do so here today. Another refrain that's just very old and tired and not supported by anything is just ask the questions, just let the public respond. As you may have realized by now, we're not in favor of putting out an NPRM that we don't think we have jurisdiction to ask. It's beyond our jurisdiction. It is inappropriate. We don't have the authority to do so, and it's a waste of the public's time to opine on something we don't think we have the jurisdiction to cover. It has nothing to do with whether or not we think foreigners should be able to participate in ballot initiatives. That has nothing to do with this. As Mr. Bob Bauer blogged on this very issue on May 4th, 2015, he recounts the statements in the Mein-Gegner and explains it all, and then says, quote, a regulatory position that puts less emphasis on legal authority and conventional legal analysis and more on public and policy and public opinion may have undeniable passion and good intentions behind it. And both Commissioner Ravel and Weintraub do strive to engage the public, the former with forums, hearings, and travel, and Commissioner Weintraub with tweets. Ellen Weintraub, April 24th, should foreigners be able to fund ballot measure committees to change U.S. laws? My take here. And then Commissioner Weintraub links to her statement, and then she says, what do you think? Back to Mr. Bauer. The answer to the question she posed to the public might well be the one she hoped for, and it might make for the best policy, but it would not be the answer supported by the best reading of the law. And then he talks a little bit about another point I'd like to make, which is the constant refrain. Let me make sure I quote the chair appropriately here. This commission has the responsibility to enforce the law. Yes, we do. And we don't think this is covered by our law. And so we give good, sound legal reasoning. We show that other people, including members of Congress, don't think that this is covered by the act. And yet, we don't care about foreign influence, and we don't care about listening to the public, and we don't care about enforcing the law. And it's just so tired and old. And if people could just debate on the merits, we'd be in a much better place. Thank you.
Commissioner Weintraub.
I'm sorry that we're tiring you out, Commissioner. I just want to say that the fact that people seek to clarify regulations or clarify the law isn't inconsistent with the position that the law already covers this. But when they recognize that other people are not going to buy that argument, then they may feel they need to take another step. I'm not familiar with the Deutsch bill. I assume you described it accurately, I don't find that inconsistent with the Brady position that, in fact, it's already covered by the law and we could interpret it that way through our regulations. As I said, I think it's already covered in our regulations, but we could make it more explicit if that would make people feel like they had more of a sound legal basis for what they have to say. I mean, I just find it kind of interesting. It's like we're going to quote Bob Bauer because his opinion is important, but anybody else who might want to weigh in, that doesn't count. We shouldn't listen to them. I like Bob Bauer. He's a smart guy, but the fact that he blogged on something doesn't make me think that, oh, well, I guess I have to fold up my tents now and change my opinion because Bob Bauer disagrees with me. No disrespect to Bob. good guy. So I'm going to make a motion at the appropriate time that we ought to, yes, we ought to engage with the public on this. I think that's a, I think that would be a good idea.
Is there further, Commissioner Walter?
I'll support the motion, but I do think that part of the motion would be to clarify one way or the other. You know, I think there's a legitimate back and forth on this. Maybe things will come out that will clarify it, make it stronger one way or the other, look further into the legislative history, get more participation on the Hill. The fact that we got this letter last night is interesting. Certainly supports us. It supports the concept of asking clarify. We write today to urge you to clarify the rules and regulations banning foreign political contributions. Well, let's get it clear one way or the other. I supported this before, so I'm inclined to do that. My preference would be, actually, if we were going to get into the foreign involvement in federal elections, would be to take a look at our own regulations at this time and see if we can strengthen the ones that do apply to federal elections. And I think that's one that we, especially post-BICRA, I mean post Citizens United, would really be very helpful. So I mean that to me, it's within our jurisdiction. I think that's where I'd like to see the emphasis go as well.
Thank you, Commissioner Walter. I concur with your points. Commissioner Goodman.
Yes. Is Mr. Meyer, is that right?
Yes.
I guess one concern I've had about this is, if my colleagues over here are correct, and I don't think that they are, but if they're correct and you seem to be associating yourself with their legal position, that an election as defined by our act includes a referendum election, then the complaints filed by your organization, there was a complaint filed, and I have a press release from AHF dated November 5, 2012, and I have a letter from the Fair Political Practices Commission of California dismissing that complaint, okay? But what it means is, ab initio, your complaints before the California Fair Practices Commission will have to be dismissed, and that the California Fair Practices law that prohibits foreign money in California elections will be preempted. If, let me read you the definition, our definition of election. It's in 52 U.S.C. section 30101. So the foreign national prohibition prohibits foreign contributions in connection with U.S. election, right? So we look at the definition of election. The term election means a general, special, primary, or runoff election, b, a convention or caucus of a political party which has authority to nominate a candidate, c, a primary election held for the selection of delegates to a national nominating convention of a political party, and d, a primary election held for the expression of a preference for the nomination of individuals for election to the office of president, period. End. That's the end of our definition. Now, if somehow you can pry into that definition, state referenda elections, then what would naturally follow is federal preemption, because our laws preempt any state law from regulating what we regulate. And that means that we would be stripping the California Fair Practices Commission and the California State Legislature of its power to enforce its prohibition on foreign money in referenda elections. And your complaint of 2012 and your complaint now to the California Fair Practices Commission complaining about Manwin and another company called Freudel, okay, would have to be dismissed. They would just be preempted by federal law, and we don't have any law in place right now to deal with this. And so I would just urge you to think carefully, because the California Political Reform Act of 1974 states, no foreign principal shall make directly or through any other person any contribution, expenditure, or independent expenditure in connection with the qualification or support of or opposition to any state or local ballot measure. And Be careful, you know, what you ask us for and what legal paradigm you support before this commission. Because if this statute includes referenda elections, then we preempt the California Fair Practices Commission. Now, the California Fair Practices Commission has had a shot at this, and they dismissed a complaint. It was the chair probably knows about this. So for this reason, I don't see how we pry a state referendum election into this definition and thereby preempt the state of California and the people of California from regulating this and their referenda elections as they see fit and as the people of California have seen fit.
Commissioner Goodman, you know, that's not a question to you, so you don't need...
I'm happy to address any of those.
Do you have a reaction to that?
Let me just interject for a minute, because, you know, you raise a really interesting point, and that very issue or questions related to that should be asked in the NPRM. So I think that that's a very appropriate way for us to get input on this matter and then to consider it.
But it's a purely legal call and
well,
a fairly straightforward definition.
Well, I
just read the definition. I don't know how you get referendum in here.
Right.
And if your position here today is, and if you had four votes to say that we do have a jurisdiction over referenda elections, then you've just preempted all state referenda laws, all of them, certainly with regard to the foreign national prohibition.
Did you want to
respond to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are you not going to let him?
No, I am. Okay. I'm just...
I appreciate all of that. As to... I'll make two points. As to the various... cases that have been brought in California, I'm not fully aware of the contents of the first one, so I don't know that they were brought under the same issues or the same facts as this one. So I simply don't know. Two, with respect to preemption law, I certainly defer to the commission their expertise as to election law, but preemption is not there are various categories of preemption under the law. It's not necessarily the case that a federal law absolutely preempts a state or a local law. And again, I'll leave that all to you, but I'll just throw that out there. And again, AHF's position on this is, you know, we're a nonprofit organization that's trying to protect the public health. This is a ballot measure that we thought would be helpful to doing that, not only the residents of Los Angeles County, but people throughout the United States. Because again, infectious diseases, no matter how they're transmitted, they do not respect borders, they do not respect state lines. This is a situation where a foreign corporation who has no interest in this public health, but only in its own profits, sought to influence and alter the decision-making of the citizens of Los Angeles County. That's what we find problematic, and we're hoping to find a solution to that. So I don't want to say I'm taking a side or AHF's taking a side, but that's the experience that we had, and we'd like to see if there's a way to have that addressed, because we think that's improper, and we think that's bad for the public health of the United States.
Yes, Madam Chair.
No,
I caught you cold. I realize you may not have been with AHF in 2012, but there is a press release that I pulled from the internet,
okay.
And it's dated November 5, 2012. And I'm not doing this to ping you. I've caught you cold, but let me read from it.
Sure.
So AHF filed a complaint
mm-hmm.
in 2012 with the California Fair Practices Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll quote from it, "We are urging the Fair Political Practices Commission to thoroughly investigate the no on government waste, no on Measure B major funding by Manwin USA committee for what certainly appears to us to be accepting illegal contributions from foreign nationals
mm-hmm.
and then trying to cover it up after we initially brought our concerns about it to light," said Michael Weinstein,
right.
President of AIDS Healthcare Foundation and one of the five named proponents of the ballot initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the matter was, and then it looks like in late 2013, the California Fair Practices Commission decided to dismiss the matter.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a bit of history for you.
I was aware of that. I was aware that happened. What I'm saying is the parties that was brought against, the factual underpinnings of their case may be very different than what's currently being presented to the Fair. That was my point. They may be sort of apples and oranges. That's
yeah, and I want to allow the California Fair Practices Commission to resolve your complaint under their law. Absolutely.
Right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Are there other comments? Is there a motion?
There is. And I just want to, because the motion contains a regulatory side, I just want to preface this by explaining that my proposal is to address this through a rulemaking on 11 CFR 110.20, the specific regulation that addresses the prohibition on contributions, donations, expenditures, independent expenditures, and disbursements by foreign nationals. It's a narrow proposal and would not implicate every single state law that affects ballot measures in any way, shape, or form. I agree with what Commissioner Walther said, and I'm going to modify what I had planned to say. I'm going to change one word to make it even more open-ended, which I firmly believe it should be. So I move that we open a rulemaking and direct the Office of General Counsel to draft a notice of proposed rulemaking proposing to amend 11 CFR 110.20 to clarify whether the prohibition on disbursements and donations by foreign nationals in connection with state and local elections applies to state and local ballot initiatives and referenda. And I might argue the fact that the commission has split on this issue suggests that perhaps it could use some clarification because we can't agree on it.
Well.
Are there any comments with respect to that? I think the way you've changed, certainly I understand that we want clarification of the issues, but I just want to say clearly that I believe that it, by rules of statutory construction, that it certainly does apply given, you know, sort of basic legislative intent and the changing of this statute, but nonetheless, I will support the motion. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed?
No.
No.
Madam Secretary, that motion fails by a vote of 3-3. Commissioner Weintraub, Walther, and myself voting yes, and Commissioner Goodman, Hunter, and Vice Chair Peterson voting no. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Myers, for being here today. Thank you. The next item is item number 4, notice of proposed rulemaking on reporting multi-state independent expenditures and electioneering communications in presidential primary elections. And Joanna Waldstreicher is here on this matter, and Bob Knopp as well. To discuss the matter. Ms. Waldstreicher.
Thank you, Chair Avil.
Thank you.
Agenda documents 15-50-A and 15-50-B are a draft notice of proposed rulemaking and a draft interpretive rule, respectively, addressing the reporting of independent expenditures that are made in connection with a presidential primary election, but that do not reference or target a specific state's primary. If either of the drafts are approved, the OGC would request the authority to make any technical and conforming changes that are necessary, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions, comments? Okay. If not, is there a motion?
Oh,
Commissioner Hunter.
We've also, this is another issue that's gone round and round a few times, and I understand the interest in doing an NPRM for a lot of the things we do, and generally I support that in order to get public comment. However, in this instance, I think it's the more prudent course is to do an interpretation and draft interpretive rule, and we've made a document public for consideration today that I think answers the questions that the public has had about this issue. And as you know, we put this issue out for public comment in, let's see, the timeline is so extensive, let me figure this out. We made this public. Thanks, Troy. January 2014, we, meaning the commission, made three drafts of this issue blue for an upcoming meeting. There were two comments received from this draft, both of the comments from Bob Lenhart and Derek Lawler, and from Holtzman, Josefiak, Vogel firm. They both supported draft B. So we have the comments. We've drafted something that alleviates the concerns. In addition, the Office of General Counsel has said that in this instance, they believe it appropriate to do a draft interpretive rule. And one reason for that is if you're trying to do something that doesn't lock the regulated community into one certain way, an interpretive rule might be a good thing because it leaves open the possibility that the public might have a better way of doing so. And so in this instance, I think that, as I said, is the more prudent course, and be happy to make a motion when appropriate.
Do you want to?
Sure.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you. I appreciate my everybody's efforts, actually, to try and come to resolution on what's a pretty arcane issue. This started with an AO request, an AO request that ironically got a unanimous response from the commission with, you know, four of the six of us who are here today were approved that answer. In the Western Representation PAC. So I guess that'll teach us to agree on something. So we issued a unanimous opinion, and then the same lawyer who requested it submitted a filing on behalf of another client in which he kind of wrote in, well, that was a dumb answer, and I'm not going to listen to it. Well, that was interesting. We don't usually get that scrawled on our campaign finance reports. So we put out three proposals. We thought, well, maybe we got it wrong. I'm always willing to reconsider. And we put out three proposals, and we got two comments. And they were thoughtful comments. They were from experienced practitioners, two former commissioners, one Republican, one Democrat. But, you know, it's still only six lawyers who thought it was worth their time to weigh in on this. And maybe this is too arcane a matter and we would never get more than that. I don't know. But I also don't feel like I've been, you know, sort of overwhelmed by the comments and by the weight of opinion out there on this. And I also think that there's an issue in the draft interpretive rule that's still kind of hanging out there, and that is what exactly is a nationwide independent expenditure. It came in the original AO, it was raised in the context of a Facebook ad. But, you know, are we only talking about ads on the internet? Are we talking about broadcast ads that have to be in literally nationwide, every single state and territory? Or could it be, you know, some just the continental United States, or maybe 40 states, or just the swing states? I mean, I'm not. One of the approaches that we posit in the draft notice of proposed rulemaking is that we call it multi-state rather than nationwide, and that we seek comment on exactly how multi-state it would have to be. So I can't support the draft interpretive rule. I mean, I do have sort of a bias that I like rulemakings better than interpretive rules, but I also don't think it answers all the questions, and so I can't support it the way it's written here today. And I think the better route would be to do the draft notice and see whether we get more comments. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they'll just, the same two commenters will just submit the same comments all over again and nobody else will pay any attention. Maybe if we put out an NPRM, it will catch more people's attention, and maybe it's closer to the election and more people are focused on it now. As I said, I'm still unclear myself whether this proposed interpretive rule would cover anything other than the internet. I think it's not, even if I were inclined to agree with the general direction of it, I think it's not there yet. It doesn't answer enough questions to be as useful as it could be to the regulated community and the people who would be trying to follow it. So, And I do think on some of these questions, you know, we got comments that addressed certain aspects of the proposals we put out there, but not all aspects, including this issue of how nationwide or multi-state IE would have to be. So, as I said, I appreciate the effort. I'm glad we're trying to think about this and resolve this in a way that makes sense to people out there. But I still think the better way to go is with the draft NPRM.
Commissioner Hunter.
I just came up with this idea as you were talking. What about just the idea that potentially we approve the draft interpretive rule today or in this soon, and without getting into the definition of nationwide? Because as you know, we have sort of talked about that amongst ourselves and couldn't really come up with a definition that we could agree on. So maybe we agree on this for this election cycle, because obviously the election cycle's already started, and if we do an NPRM, you have another issue of timing. You obviously have to give people time for notice and comment, blah, blah, blah. So if we agreed on this interpretive rule now or soon, and then agreed to put out an NPRM that would affect the next election cycle, so that as people are doing IEs now in this cycle, they can be sort of taking mental notes of saying, okay, well, I'm sort of working on the fly now. Let me write some comments to this other stuff that will affect the next cycle. And I think that the comment deadline for an NPRM should be well down the road. I mean, well down the road. So it gives people a chance to live life in this new realm. I mean, I think
you're down the road. How well down the road?
Yeah, like probably a year down the road.
Wow, or maybe that is well down the road.
Yeah, but we need to give them some time to kind of work it through. I hear what you're saying, but I think we've already tried to figure out a definition for nationwide, and I don't know that we're gonna be able to come up with one in the short term. And then that's probably gonna leave us with nothing, but as in no NPRM and no interpretive rule. And so maybe this is, as I said, I just thought of it, maybe this is sort of the middle ground approach to give people something to go by, because now the current law in the books is the AO that nobody likes. And so just throwing that out there as a potential compromise.
Do you want to speak, Commissioner Walther?
I was just going to go the other direction toward a compromise, and that is, what if we adopted a process to consider a rule, but in the meantime agree that regardless, we will, if we're unsuccessful in getting anywhere, that we will consider the interpretive rule. And I was thinking that would be a possibility, but I see both of those sound reasonable to me. I don't know. We need to think about it some more. But it seems to me we definitely have in mind to do something, and the question is the procedure, and maybe if we agree that there's an interpretive rule, but it ends, so there's an end date on it, then you know we know it's not a matter of getting four votes to change it. It's over, and we have to start again. I mean, that's a possibility too. So I don't know, just throwing things out.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It sounds this issue, as Commissioner Weintraub pointed out, is a fairly arcane one, but is starting, I think, to have more application, and it's not a particularly ideologically charged or controversial issue. So I think that it's one of those things where it would be nice if we could find some way to move forward. The reason why I liked the interpretive rule was we're not that far away from primary season, and it would be great to have something in place, some sort of guidance that could be applicable to the current primary season. And so I'm wondering if it sounds like, since there's at least there isn't open division on this issue, whether or not I don't think we'd necessarily feel comfortable on the fly trying to come up with a resolution now, but I think if we were to talk in the meantime before the October open meeting to see whether or not we could put together some sort of a two-track proposal where we could provide some guidance for this election cycle and have a process in place that would hopefully maybe elicit more comments and maybe an opportunity to think about these things in a little bit more of a deliberative way through the NPRM as well. Maybe we won't be able to reach agreement, but it seems like that might be a fruitful path. So
let me say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I mean, for my part, I would I would agree with doing something like that. I think an NPRM is important because, number one, for, and not that I object to the concept of working on an interpretive rule for the purposes of the reporting now, but the problem with those are that people can report differently. And for me, as the disclosure to the public of these issues is really important, and it's much more difficult to obtain that kind of disclosure that's necessary in an election when everybody is reporting in a different fashion. And of course, interpretive rules have no sanction, so there's no actual requirement to comply. So, you know, for that reason, I think it'd be important for us to go forward on an NPRM, but I certainly agree that we should be working together to try to figure out a dual track to get it done.
I would just add that I agree that we should have some sort of uniformity in this, because I think the current, as we found out in the post Western representation AO, is that it becomes very confusing as to how do you, if you're going to, let's say that you bought a broadcast ad on CNN, MSNBC, Fox, that broadcast nationwide, then which, and if you did it on the eve of the primary season, you might actually have to allocate that between many different states, and I think that leads to confusion, which will result in a lack of uniformity. So I think that if we had some ability to maybe bring a little more uniformity to bear, I think that would actually be helpful for the regulated community. But also, I think it will bring greater disclosure, because if you spread it out amongst enough states, then it's possible that the thresholds don't get triggered in any one, and you actually might have a nation. You could have a widely broadcast ad that, because it was broadcast on the eve of many, you know, of a succession of primaries, may not, if you divided it amongst, you know, 10, 15 states or what have you, you may not trigger the threshold for disclosing in any of them. Right. And so I know that disclosure, I think we would all agree that the disclosure would be important and essential in that sort of instance. And so if we could, we're going to keep discussing this. And I think that we could, if we could do something, I think that would be very beneficial.
All right, so Commissioner Weintraub.
My only, happy to continue to work on this. I think it could be productive, hopefully. My only request is that we actually do continue to work on this, and not do what tends to happen around here and wait until the day before the meeting and then say, oh, here's my new idea. So let's actually try and engage on this.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Waltz-Strecker. Item number five, Commissioner Goodman has asked that discussion of the documents relating to the disclosure of enforcement files be held over. And we just received a memo from the Office of General Counsel yesterday with regard to my request of greater documents that could be produced to the public. So I've not had an opportunity to review that document, and so I think that item also should be held over to the next meeting. If that's Commissioner Weintraub.
I absolutely agree, and my staff has already had some conversation with Commissioner Goodman's staff, and I again hope that we can work together towards something that we might all be able to agree on. Might not be the perfect thing from everybody's perspective, but I think there is a lot of grounds for agreement on this topic.
I agree, and for those of us who believe in transparency, you know, the agency can improve its transparency policies. One thing that has been clear through the memos and the research that's been done by the Office of General Counsel, I think it's been very helpful, is to identify gaps in policies and formal policies of the Commission. Apparently, we have many practices that are well-trod and well-established, but no formal policy adopting that practice. And so I think there's some room for us to clarify and put in some formal procedures and understandings of the Commission.
Thank you. All right, so that matter will be held over. The next item is item number six,
and Ms. Orrick. This is on management and administrative matters. Are there any management or administrative matters that the commission needs to discuss?
There are none.
In this meeting. Thank you. Thank you all for being here. The meeting stands adjourned.